Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston, and we're here with a very, very special guest, Barry Strom. Barry is a published author of many, many books that have been out on Barnes & Noble as well as Amazon, with a very unique perspective on the other side, so to speak. That's the easiest way to explain that, Barry, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one way to explain it. Yeah, I think it's pretty unique.
Well, tell us a little bit. I know we spoke a little over a year ago when you had just got finished with one of your books prior to that, but you've got a new book out now. So let's first talk about your past books and a little bit of experience, and then we'll jump into this new one and tell the audience a little bit about that as well.
Okay, very good. Well, 10 years ago, I didn't even believe in ghosts, so we've come a pretty long way. The store we're in here is about 8 miles from Gettysburg, so I got started in by going over and doing paranormal photography on the battlefield. And somebody said, why don't you publish the pictures? So I thought, well, that's a good idea. So the first book I did was called Haunting in History, the Battle of Gettysburg. Then we were introduced to board channeling from some friends out in Salt Lake City, where it's, you know, the board we use is specially designed. Some people refer to it as a Ouija board, but it's far from it. Everything we do is very spiritual on the board. And so we learned to get messages from the other side. As we started that, we recorded everything that we did. And I thought, man, this would make an interesting book, because now we got the spirits telling us about what it's like over there in heaven and what they do and just what takes place. So the second book I wrote was called Afterlife, What Really Happens on the Other Side. Once we got that one out, then I started asking questions about aliens because I was curious about what goes on. We actually start at that point to channel the spirit of a real, honest-to-God alien. And he tells us that, you know, I can talk to you because your soul is the same as the souls of extraterrestrials in our galaxy. We do universal reincarnation, and you can come back as on another planet as you want. And in fact, we have all been on other planets. One thing that he did tell us was that soul energy basically has been around forever. Humans have only been here about 200,000 years. So he said, where do you think your soul was before humans were on Earth? Well, the answer is we lived on other planets. So long story short there, he starts telling me all about the extraterrestrial world and what goes on. So I took what he was telling me and I write a book called Aliens Among Us, Exploring Past and Present. We proved the alien existence in the past, and then he tells me what's going on with cursory information about what's happening today. So then we start moving on in our channeling, and we get a little better and we get a little better at this, and I realize that we can actually channel with famous people. So we got the idea that why not do a conspiracy book where we talk to the spirits and the spirits that we talk to actually give us the information on what happened. So we started, one evening we channeled with Jack Kennedy, for instance. He tells us exactly what happens during his assassination, who pulls the trigger, and it wasn't Oswald, who was behind it, gives us all the information. We start doing different types of conspiracies. We talk to George Patton. He tells us how he really dies, and it was nowhere what the story was that he died in Germany. That wasn't even close. We did characters such as Butch Cassidy, King Richard III. We wind up writing a book about 26 different conspiracies. And the name of that book was called Spirits Speak of Conspiracies and Mysteries. That is actually the last book that I have released, and my publisher just came out last month and brought it out on Kindle. So you can actually go in and download the conspiracy book off of Amazon. So the alien book that I had published was just kind of laid the foundation for things. And the spirits start, in our sessions, they start giving me more information about the alien world and what's going on in the present, but also what's going to happen in the future. So I wrote another book, and this will be my fifth one. It's coming out the end of June, and it's called Spirits Speak of the Universe. In it, we talk about extraterrestrials, universal spirituality, and the universal God, because as we find out, and my alien name that we channeled through all this, his name is Mu. Mu tells us that on his planet, they actually worship the same God that we do on this planet because it's in our galaxy. So we do, the book that's coming out features some very interesting information. We talk about different types of aliens. We talk about spaceships, different types of vehicles, and they tell us the secret of how they cover these vast distances in such a short period of time. And that's going to be out hopefully the end of June. It's at the printer right now as we speak. And I just got a contract for my sixth book, because we now have channeled the information on the life of Jesus, the missing 18 years. He's told us everything that has happened to him. Many secrets about his life, and I now have the contract on that, and within a year we should be seeing that book out on the market.
That's actually an interesting subject. I know that being historically sound, as you know, that we've had a lot of conversations, there is a gap in the Bible on Jesus Christ where there is a lot of missing information from the point in time of past birth, so to speak, all the way up to when he becomes the Messiah is not covered at all.
that is correct. And there was a very logical reason for it. He basically lives a normal life for that period of time, and nobody wrote anything about it.
Yep, but he lived a very human life. There were books that were written that were pulled out that covered brief pieces and parts of Jesus, and I think that's probably because from a standpoint when they were combining all these different stories, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Revelations, and all this other stuff, they wanted to keep Jesus as the Messiah and not express the human side, which is a sad thing, really.
Yeah, really. There was a whole group of them back in those days who were arguing that he wasn't the Messiah, that he was just a great teacher. So there's tons of gospels that never made it into the Bible that are out there. And the book that I have ready to go to the publisher, I have a list of over 300 missing gospels that existed at the time that Constantine held the first conference at Nicaea. So there's a lot of information out there. I was utterly amazed when I started reading some of these lost gospels.
It is intriguing. I've had the privilege of reading some of the works that have been released. Some of them you never get your hands on, really, because they're still guarded that you just can't read them. But a few of the missing pieces that are out there, different books and so forth, that didn't make it into the King James Version of the Bible or the Bible in general, are fascinating. There's some really interesting stuff there that really makes you dig deep into the culture.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing. I mean, just take one example. The Gospel of the Nazarenes, they refer to him being married to Mary Magdalene. Uh-huh. And that's where that whole story for the book came from, is out of that lost gospel.
Even some of the way we perceive angels today, there are some of the gospels specifically talk about the archangels, where they came from, how they were created, the fall of several of them, the rise of several more, and all of that stuff was pulled out. And I'm not quite sure why, because it's fascinating when you start reading it.
it's a lifetime of reading. I mean, the more I got involved in this, it's, well, as you know, you're a member of our Facebook group, so you see some of the things we post there. But it's, I mean, you could stay up all day reading this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just so fascinating.
That's why I like history and theology, and why I spent quite a long time in it. Because when you dig past all the basic understanding and you actually start to get into it, whether it be archaeology, whether it be the pyramids, whether it be cultures, whether it be written or missing books, whether it be hieroglyphs, there's just this amazing culture that most people don't realize is there that pieces a lot of things together logically that nobody takes the time to look at.
No, and there's just an overwhelming mass of information out there. Mm-hmm. And some of the lost gospels are totally irrelevant, and some of them I can't even understand what they're saying. But there's a mass of information for anybody that wants to go out and dig a little bit. And once you start making that reading, you start to understand that, you know, perhaps you should be questioning some of the accuracy of the Gospels that were selected in certain areas.
Like I said, some of them are kind of irrelevant. Some of them are mundane tasks. There's a whole Gospel out there on the tasks of somebody's life and everyday things that they did that really were kind of boring anyway. But there are some things that honestly I think should have been left in there because it leaves big gaps that can allow you to not only understand the Gospels themselves, but the other cultures involved during that period in time, from the Roman culture, the Egyptian culture, the Celtic culture. There's a lot of Gospels that can tie a lot of that stuff together, but they were pulled out, and I'm not sure why.
Well, there are reasons why it's pulled out. I mean, in many instances, the politicians didn't want the people to be hearing what was in those Gospels because mm-hmm. it would undermine their power.
Yeah. Power struggles. You got to love them. I know that you talk in your new book, you mentioned that earlier. You talk about space vessels and distant travel. Now, I don't want to break into too much detail on it because obviously we want people to read your book. But that's an interesting subject in itself because it's a very big controversy in the scientific community as well as the space community about UFOs and visitation due to those factors. Because our current understanding, there's absolutely no way we can travel hundreds of thousands of light years. Scientific theory kind of breaks that down to make it make more sense.
Well, the truth of it is, it's at the rate that our vehicles travel today, if a vehicle left our solar system and just went to the nearest star, you know, just simply traveled there, at the speeds we're capable of today, it'd be 26,000 years. Uh-huh. And, you know, when we channeled Mu, his planet is on the far side of the Milky Way. So it's a long way off. I said, how long does it take you to get here? And his answer was about 10 hours. So their technology lets him basically come from the far side of the Milky Way before we could drive to Chicago. It's just phenomenal. And once disclosure really does come, and it's going to be very soon, people are going to be truly amazed at what's been going on around us.
Well, you know, strictly from a scientific standpoint, if you can, as an example, a wormhole is a prime example, if you can fold time and space in on itself, what takes thousands of light years could only take hours. We just don't have the advanced technology ourselves to be able to travel or fold that time and space. The theory is sound, though. If you look into the science and math of folding time and space, wormhole theory, and so forth, it's plausible to do. We just have no idea how to do it.
Yeah, that's correct. They tell us that they have this concept of a molecular teleportation. And it's almost like the old beam me up, Scotty. Mm-hmm. And it's they have this ability to just and do this with huge vehicles. And that's how they travel these vast distances.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's a concept today, even back then when Star Trek created it, the concept of holding a pattern and then being able to redistribute that pattern over thousands of light years to us, it's almost impossible. How do you store a physical being and then be able to transport it that quickly in an instant? But it has to be possible. You have to be able to do it.
Yeah, if you truly believe that there's aliens out there, they have to have this intense advanced technology over us in order to do this stuff. I asked Moo one night. I said, "How long will it be before humans have the ability to truly travel the stars?" And his answer was 150 to 200 years. So that's how many generations he's telling us that we are from actually being able to get into our ship and zip on over to Alpha Centauri or wherever we want to go.
I think we'll probably have limited space travel within the next 50 years or so, but limited means the possibility of being out towards Jupiter or Saturn, but not reaching the end of our star system with human capability.
Yeah, well, just think. I mean, it's our galaxy. And then there's billions of galaxies out there.
So. Yeah, we have to get past the time variable. And right now, the only way we have passed the time variable is basically the easiest way to explain it, even though it's not cryogenic, is to be able to suspend the body so that you can reduce the aging process. Now, we have fully been able to do that, suspending in fluids, reducing the aging process from, you know, the years that we're into, 1 year spans roughly about 25 years right now. So in the next 50 years, it'll probably be 1 year can span at least 100 years. But can you imagine that? Suspending yourself just to go to Jupiter and come back knowing that when you get back, everybody you know is gone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole human race could be gone when you get back.
Yeah. It takes a lot of dedication to be able to do that, definitely.
Oh, yeah. No, the pioneers that really do first tackle these long distances are going to have to be special people. But once disclosure comes, you know, then they're going to be able to tell us things in the open, and we're going to be able to pursue some of this technology. I mean, they're the ones that gave us the rocket technology. That's how Germany advanced so fast at the beginning of World War II. Stop and think what they accomplished from 1938 until 42. I mean, their rocket technology was in ruins in 38, and by 42, they're shooting rockets over Great Britain. There had to be a reason how they could do that. They were smart people, but they weren't that smart. And the way they did it, there was a crash in Bavaria in 38, where a bunch of aliens, you know, survived. It was a malfunction, and they survived. And they actually gave the Nazis the help in doing in their rocket technology. And that's how they did the advancement. I wrote about that in my first alien book.
The German culture is actually fascinating with how they advanced in a lot of things and some of the other things, both supernatural, paranormal, and beyond. They had a fascination with a lot of things that the average people just simply didn't want to touch. I think that's a really interesting subject, and UFOs were a major part of that. They claim to have been in contact with several alien races. Now, I don't know for a fact that they were, but it's still kind of amazing when you start looking into some of the conspiracy and theory that they ran into. And a lot of that started, like you said, from witnessing a crash and collecting the survivors.
Yeah. I wrote about this in pretty much detail. I think this, I get my books mixed up, but I think this one was actually in the conspiracy book. But everybody survived. It was a mechanical failure, so they landed intact, and there was like 20 of them. And they didn't fully understand Hitler's motives back that early, so they started giving him help. And then once they understood what was going on, they bailed out, and they actually were rescued, and their ship was restored, and they left. And that is why the Nazis kind of hit a stalemate in their technology, because at that point, then they came over here to us, and they assisted us with our atomic bomb technologies. So it's when you look back, when you're told all of the things that they did to us through the, or that helped us through the ages. It's phenomenal. It's just phenomenal what they've done to help the human race.
Well, it's not surprising, though, and I've had that conversation with many, many people, even though I have some religious aspects that I believe, God, the devil, and so forth, that I don't get into. If you look at cultures from the beginning of culture, from the beginning of writings, from the beginning of hieroglyphs, from the beginning of pictures, all the way back, you will see that somehow we believe that we've been visited by something that was considered gods or a god. And that came from the sky. And
yes,
a lot of
absolutely.
Those are also depicted in vehicles.
Yes. Yes,
I have actually had that conversation with a historian a little while back. Last week we were talking about the history and how aliens connect to the history in a lot of different ways. That most people avoid due to religious context and so forth, but if you think about it, can still fall into the same aspect. You know, how do we portray God? Well, he's a metaphysical being that came from the stars and created everything. So, does it really matter how you define him? Could he be an alien? Could he be something else? The point is, he's something that is not human.
Correct. We're told that he's a universal energy.
Well, and that makes sense. I mean, he would be virtually everywhere.
Correct. He basically is. I mean, that's, we've been doing amazing channeling for the book that will be out next year, for the book on the life of Jesus. And some of the stuff that we're being told in that book is incredible. There'd be a lot of information in that book that is going to make a lot of people irritated because a bunch of it goes against classic religious teaching. It's a wonderful concept. I mean, it solidifies your belief system, but it is certainly not classical belief.
Well, I'm a big one, and I've always stood behind this, even though I have my own belief systems, to, by defining people very clearly that there's a difference between religion and truth, if that makes sense.
Oh no, that makes total sense, believe me. We could talk about that one for the next hour on its own.
Well, I mean, standing back and studying virtually every religious aspect for the past 23 years as a part of the process of being in the paranormal and deciphering things on my own, every religious culture, everything up to and past the unity of religion that we know today, you find that the difference between religion and reality sometimes are a big, there's a big gray area.
that's a polite way of saying it, yeah.
Yeah, and I never down any religious culture. I think it's wonderful. It does a lot of great things. It brings a lot of people together. But when you start looking at the reality and the history and the standpoints and so forth, you find that there's a lot of things that could be there that define things a little bit differently than each individual situation. And that's where I end up clashing with people a lot of times, because people believe so strongly in their belief system that they don't take the time to go above and beyond that, where I'm a studier and a researcher and a learner, so I'll just rip things apart.
Yeah. Well, the fallacy is, what do we got, 1,200-plus religions in the world, mm-hmm. and people in one of those religions think that's the only way you're going to go to heaven. Well, guess what? You know, 99% of the people on Earth are not going to go to hell because they're not a member of that religion. People, you know, it's the judgment is much different than what people believe. You can, no matter how you live your faith, how you believe in your faith, be you Hindu, Buddhist, you know, Muslim, it's how you live your life. It's not the religion that you espouse that much. I mean, you can sit and you can repeat, be able to have the whole Bible memorized. And if you go out and live a bad life, all that memory is wasted time. It's not just one. Everybody has a shot at going to heaven. And through reincarnation, you come back and you have to go through all these different segments so that you learn. And it's that learning that lets you advance in the realms of heaven. It's very, very interesting.
Let's go into a little bit more detail about, you sent me an overview and some of the chapters that you're discussing, even though we won't get into a lot of detail, are fascinating concepts. Like you discuss in chapter 8, a galactic committee, and we won't get into a lot of that and the treaties involved, but I think that's actually a fascinating thing as well. Being a science fiction fan myself, being a part of the UFO culture and what can be beyond, the reality is once you advance to a certain point, there has to be some sort of controlling factor, controlling committee, controlling people in space, and you either incorporate into that or you don't.
Really?
So I think that's kind of an interesting concept for somebody to cover, because you know, that's never really been covered from a logical standpoint outside of science fiction itself.
Well, yes. If you didn't have some understanding, we wouldn't be here. Their technologies are so advanced, it'd be like squashing an ant. The only reason humans are on this Earth is because extraterrestrials want us to be here. You know, if you can cross the galaxy in 10 hours, you can certainly wipe out the human race in about a minute at the most. So it's, you know, you have to understand there's only one reason that we're here. I mean, we've actually had physical interaction with aliens. I have seen a real one. My wife has been abducted, and they filled in all the details of her abduction for us. So I'll tell you the quick story of when I saw the alien. I've known that we've both been abductees in the past, and that's part of the reason why we can do some of the things we can do. But we were sound asleep, and I, you know, wake up in the middle of the night one night, and I look over, and here is this 7-foot form standing by the side of the bed, and it's a reptilian. And I, you know, I think, well, you must be dreaming this one. So I, you know, made sure I was awake, looked at him again, and believe it or not, he looks at me, and we always sleep with night lights, so I could see him. He looks at me and smiles. As soon as he smiles, he knocks me out, and that's the end of it. I get up the next morning, and I'm thinking, man, that was one hell of a dream. So we have friends out in Salt Lake City that taught us board channeling. So there, when we started out with what we do, we would let them have the board in Salt Lake City, and I would ask the questions over Skype from Pennsylvania. And they would answer the questions, and they would always be able to tell me what was happening in Pennsylvania, having no idea. So anyway, that night, I said, I got to solve this one. So I get on, we call the people up on Skype, and they have the board set up. They're in Salt Lake City, we're in Pennsylvania. So I said to them, first of all, I asked if we could have Moo come through for us. So he comes in, and I said, Moo, did I really see a real alien last night? And his answer was, and these people knew nothing about this out in Salt Lake, it spells out on the board, yes, and did you see him smile at you? So that's pretty good evidence, you know, I actually thought it was a dream until my friends out there that had no knowledge let me give me the exact answer of what happened. And I hadn't even told my wife that he had smiled at me. Because, I mean, some of the wacky stuff we do, there's a limit to what you admit. So I thought maybe I'd keep that one quiet. But that's how they tied in the fact that, yes, I actually really did see one.
When you get into some detail, according to your by notes here, about the treaty, galactic agreements and peace, details of some of the agreement that's been shared with you, and why not only do a lot of these races protect the younger races like humans, but reasons for why they don't reveal themselves soon enough, why there's some secrecy involved in it, and the reason that some of these testings, abductions, and so forth happen beforehand. And I think that's kind of fascinating because the only time I've actually seen that, and this is the geek coming out with me, but the only time I've actually seen that addressed was actually in Star Trek. They have a specific way, as the Federation of Planets, they have a specific way of going about business before they interact with cultures while taking care of the younger cultures, as they know that they could be proficient later. So they observe, they test, they experiment, they hide amongst them without being seen, and wait for the moment where it's time for them to reveal themselves and say, hey, look, we're here. Welcome to the Federation.
Yes. And believe it or not, there is so much accurate stuff in Star Wars, you'd be amazed once you know what's going on in the background. Whoever wrote that had a darn good idea of what was taking place. I mean, even some of the creatures. You know, the human race is so vain to think that we have to look for a planet like Earth with oxygen and water to support life, which we are very sure is going to look like us. Well, guess what? They ain't going to look like us. They're not going to resemble us in any ways. One night we had Moo come in while we were gathering information, channeling information, and he said, I have two friends with me tonight. He said, they're from another galaxy, and they're here to help you with your information. So I said to him, would you mind describing one for me? Well, he describes this individual, and we actually had an artist make up a sketch in this book that's coming out. And it has, instead of feet, it walks on four hands. It has a very small head with a single eye. I mean, you will not, it's wild, but it's not that much different than some of the creatures that you see in Star Wars. I'm telling you, whoever wrote that had some inside information. They were getting some help.
Star Trek, and the creations behind it, their writers actually are a part of the scientific community and beyond, so they build up a lot of things that logically other people don't think about. One of them are the alien races, from everything from energy-based intelligent forms to animals and creatures that live amongst outer space, almost as if a whale lives in the water, to different forms of intelligence that communicate in many, many ways. I think it's fascinating the way the writers put together a lot of that. It's also fascinating how a lot of that aspect throughout the years has developed into real science today.
No coincidence.
Theories and so forth. It's actually kind of extraordinary. Well, listeners, you're listening to BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations in America. If you're going to go with the best podcast or otherwise, make sure you go with BBS. Talk to Donald and his crew. They're great people. It's a wonderful station. A couple of things going on this month. Gateway Paranormal will be at Hales Bar Dam in Tennessee at the end of May. If you don't know who Gateway Paranormal is, they're a wonderful bunch of guys that are advancing technology as well as advancing themselves through the paranormal community. They will be working with Generation Truth. We'll be following along with them to tell a little bit of their story. There'll be details on that on Monday, so make sure you keep an eye on all of my sites because they're wonderful guys. And join them in May's expedition. Hales Bar Dam, Jeffrey and Vicky are wonderful people. That's a great place, to my understanding, a wonderful place. I haven't been there myself yet, but we are going to be going there to film. So I encourage you, if you're in the area there in Tennessee, make sure you look them up and show up for the event. A couple of other little things that are going on. OSR will be doing an event on the 31st with Joel Myers at GoSight, Jay Pierce, who is the creator of Rat Paranormal, and I'll be tagging along actually while Jay gives me some orders and tells me what to do for the night. So if you are in the area, tune into the Facebook events, tune into some of the lives, and we'll kind of give you some behind the scenes with Robert and the crew at OSR. They're a great bunch of people at the Ohio State Reformatory. You're listening to Barry Strom. Barry Strom is an author who has a very unique way and perspective of speaking to the dead, and actually has written many, many books, not only about the past, but the present, the future, and so forth. Barry, I appreciate you coming on today. Let's just kind of jump back into your book a little bit. You've got a fascinating set here. I'm going to jump a little bit further up because some of your later chapters actually, I think, are probably the more extraordinary of the bunch. You mention a little later on when you get past the galactic stuff, you actually get into Atlantis and lost civilizations, some archaeology and extraterrestrial activity, and how that has actually been there for quite a bit longer than most people think. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit because archaeology is a fascination. And Atlantis has always been a fascination of mine, whether it exists or not. So I know you can't get into a lot of detail because people are going to have to read the book, but let's talk about that a little bit. Atlantis and the hidden city has been something people have been searching for across the globe for ever since I can remember. Since I was 6 years old, I think I saw the first piece on it. Do you believe that that is a part of an alien culture?
No, it's actually a part of a human culture. The aliens played a very, very big role in advancing them. And in some ways, the residents of Atlantis were almost as advanced as we are now. Apparently, it reached a culture, so a population of around 1 million people. They tell us it was located somewhere relatively close to Bermuda, but that earthquakes and seismic actions have covered it with water. But what they tell us is that the culture had this type of energy similar to our atomic energy, and they had this huge catastrophe, and it wipes the whole population out. And that was how Atlantis ended. But they tell us they had as many as 1 million people in that culture at one time.
Well, that's interesting. And it's so logical because there are no traces of it now that we have found. But I've always been fascinated with the culture itself. The only link that I ever found that was very interesting is at one point there is one person in the culture and the history and the books. And this actual individual, when you do your historic research, if you break it down, by name presented himself after the fall of Atlantis, not only in the Celtic culture, but he went to the Japanese culture. He was in the Viking culture. He spent time virtually in every culture across the world under the same name. Now, the easiest way to explain that name, and people are going to laugh when you hear this, is the name Merlin. Believe it or not, according to every historic culture and research, Merlin existed.
I have no trouble with that.
and in the historic content on some of these nations, he claims to have been a resident of a very intellectually advanced race and a culture that fell before he ever ends up in all of his other adventures, which is why he's such a good magician, has access to different sciences that the average person didn't, could do the things that he could do, as including using certain herbs and certain abilities to heal people, which he did in Japan, actually, in some of the historic myths where he shows up there. He showed a whole culture how to use certain things to heal people that they didn't know before. So it kind of amazes me at the same time, because though those brief points in history that you can find those glyphs and those explanations that have been resolved or supposedly translated, it doesn't really mention Atlantis. But he's very stern about mentioning that before he took on the culture that he did, he came from somewhere else that was quite advanced.
Yes. Yeah, well, we've all been on other planets. You know, there are humans' souls walking the Earth today that their souls were residents of Atlantis. I mean, theoretically, I believe that we could actually channel with an individual that was from that culture and talk to them. We've done some pretty wild stuff with our channeling, and I have no doubt that I'd be capable of doing that sometime. And we just have so much going on, we haven't got around to it. But you know, we did a session one time where one of the spirits that were present hinted that they were on Atlantis. We never pursued it, but I am sure that it would not be that hard to pull up a soul that would that we could channel and get that information.
Now let's talk a little bit about the history and the archaeology and how this relates a little bit without it getting into very much detail about your book, but it'll give people a little bit of a seed. Obviously, if you look into archaeology to a certain point, and there's a wonderful author that he's retired, so he doesn't go on radio shows anymore, that created this to work with the religious aspect a little bit at one point. But if you start digging into some of the historic content and archaeologies, for instance, in Egypt, when you start talking about the gods and the relation of the gods, you find that certain ones, yes, walked among humans and could have perhaps been humans, but you also find a little bit of a unique connection there where some of these gods are very distinctively never human, and they're depicted that way as if they came from either the stars or somewhere else, if that makes sense.
Yes, actually, you can see depictions of aliens in the Nazca lines in Peru. I mean, that is one of the finest archaeological evidences of alien life anywhere. In my alien book that I currently have out, I devoted a chapter to the Nazca lines because I actually go in and Mu tells me what the different figures stand for. For instance, there's a huge spider down there. For anybody that is not familiar with the Nazca lines, they should look it up on Google and look at some of the images. But there's this huge spider shape that you have to actually be in the air to see. And obviously the people down in Peru had a little problem flying through the air to see these images. But there's this huge spider. And I asked him, I said, Mu, what does that spider stand for? And he goes, oh, that was the type of alien that was here helping him. I said, what? And he said, yeah, they were spider people. I said, how tall did those spiders stand? And he said, oh, they stood about 6 foot. So imagine an alien being that looks like a spider that stands 6 foot. But there's no, I mean, when you think about it and you look at that image in those Nazca lines, they made that to memorialize the aliens that were helping them. Those lines all stand for something. It was a really, really interesting chapter when I wrote that.
Well, it would kind of make sense, and then you're doing it to an aspect so that when something else flies over it, as the easiest way to explain in their age as a god, then you know the other gods that are present, so to speak, or were present at one point.
Yeah, no, in their minds, all the gods came from the sky. So when these alien beings come from the sky, the only terminology they had to associate with them was the word God. So that's why they're referred to as gods.
Yeah, well, and you find that a lot in many, many cultures, as well as the fact of little statements that at one point they did walk among us. The author that I had mentioned earlier, he was trying to figure out how to combine, because he came from a religious background, how to combine the religious background of the King James Version of the Bible and a realistic background. Now, when I originally read his books, they were handed off to me by somebody else. I didn't talk to this guy for quite a few years afterwards, but he created a theological version that basically just covered the possibility. And one of the things that he talks about is the word Nephilim, the fallen angels in the lost books of the Bible. So the way he explains it is, do we have it off base in our current balance? The answer is yes, but does it work in junction? The answer is also yes. As an example, the Egyptian gods, in his terminology, could have very well been Nephilim and fallen angels, or something from the space and so forth. The Norsian gods could be the same way. You can link all of this stuff together and still revolve around the same situation somewhere along the line. They came from the sky. They revolved around one source. They came and lived with humans or amongst humans. They helped them advance, and eventually they left.
Yeah, and I'll give you something else that you're gonna probably choke on. We were doing, when I did the chapter on different types of space vehicles, you know, you always hear the term mothership and you think that's the big boy. Well, guess what? Those motherships are not that big. Moo tells us about this immense vehicle that they have that they use as a base. And he told us that when we wrote the chapter a year ago now, he said it was hidden behind Saturn. And that's what they use as their base ship. I said, how big is it? He said, oh, it's as big as the United States. Then I said, how many different alien types would be on a ship like that? And he said, in excess of 250 different types of aliens. Think about that. So you got wing, any, it only stretches the imagination. You got all these different alien types, many that we can't even comprehend. And yes, the history and the images that we see carved in stone, those were beings from outer space.
Oh, it would make sense. You think about it from an early culture, and I've actually had that conversation many, many times. Let's just say time travel is possible. If I were to go all the way back to King Arthur's day, as an example, and here I have a cell phone, a modern revolver, I have a lighter, and several other devices, including a bulletproof vest, as an example. And I go back that many years to when people were just using swords, bows, and arrows, what would I be?
You would be a god.
I would be a god.
That's correct. Or you could be king, either way. Or you could be a godly king. That's a world of possibilities.
So when we're looking at a lot of these different cultures and these different depictions, and a lot of them are formed differently, they're deformed, they look different than us and so forth, one would indicate that if they're coming from somewhere else, they're an advanced culture, and their culture, it's not advanced, but to us it would be incredibly primitive, as our primitive beings. We're just now learning how to use shields, swords, and create our own sewer system, which isn't very capable.
Yeah, really.
Why wouldn't it be a god?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they tell us repeatedly that we're a very young culture here, and that is why we're heavily protected. There's actually a procedure that the extraterrestrials go through to come here and visit. One example that I use is, for the extraterrestrials, it's like humans going to a zoo to watch the animals. They come here to watch humans. Everything's relative in this world.
Well, that makes sense to me. I joke around all the time, but I say that we would be like a Petri dish, right? Mm-hmm. In a Petri dish, if you just let it sit there and you have a different bunch of cultures and different things sitting there, eventually that mold develops into life, that life advances. And if you just let it sit there and rot for a little while, you might even actually have living creatures growing in it. So what do you do with it at that point? Well, you just sit there with the light shining on it and keep an eye on your Petri dish. Do you really want to kill it if it's intelligent?
No, they've all of these cultures throughout. Now, they tell us actually that visitation on Earth has been taking place since the time of the dinosaurs. So that's 60 million years in the past. That's a long time. So it's, they've been here forever. Just the same as they tell us that there have been multiple seedings, and they refer to it as seedings here on Earth, where they have attempted to have intelligent life. One of them, they attempted to seed when the Earth was pretty much covered with water. And that's why you see dolphins and whales, and you see mammals in the water. That is an attempt at seeding, but they realized they couldn't. There was a limit to how much they could evolve. But there's a reason for everything.
I still have a flip of the coin in the air, I guess, on the seeding theory. But theoretically, we had to have came from somewhere. Scientifically speaking, yes, we could be a one in a billion chance. But if that's the case, then there would be another one in a billion chance that we should have already picked up on with the technology we have today, and we have yet to find anything other than planets that seem similar. So to me, that says there's a little bit more in the creation of something tinkered around a little bit to try to come up with the human nature.
Yeah, really. Now, there's a lot to the evolution of humans. We talked about abductions. And Moose said, we really prefer that you don't refer to them as abductions, but refer to them as learning sessions, where they take you, if there's something wrong, quite often they heal you. You know, there's people will all of a sudden be miraculously healed, and they don't have any idea how this happens. Well, in many instances, they've been taken, and while they were up in the vehicles, they cured them, sent them back, cleared their memories, and they had no idea what's taking place. So there is so much more going on than any of us can ever imagine. It's when the day comes for disclosure, and they start to really tell us about what is taking place or what has taken place in the past, we're going to be blown away. And there's many, many people just simply aren't ready for it. And that's why the treaty calls for the fact that they're allowed to observe us, and we keep their presence a secret. That's basically the bottom line of the agreement that we have with them.
I could see that to a certain point. I mean, if you were to show people a advanced culture of beings in any way, shape, or form, whether it's human advancement or whether it comes from the stars, too early, panic sets in. When panic sets in, war sets in, chaos sets in, and a lot of crazy things can happen. So you have to kind of wait until it's time, so to speak, to welcome people in.
Think of the War of the Worlds show on the radio, and what was that, 30-something? Mm-hmm. People were jumping off buildings thinking there really were Martians coming. So it's like the old movie, You Can't Stand the Truth. When it comes, it's going to be a terrible shock to a lot of people, and they're going to have to grasp it.
And that's the war aspect alone can be a scary situation for an advanced culture going into a primitive culture and introducing yourself, not to mention how you can interfere with the advancement of that culture. If you come in too early or if you go in too late and you show the wrong thing, all of a sudden they may be worshiping you and everything that they're supposed to become changes. There's just so many different things that could happen that makes it dangerous. And that's the one thing, again, I hate to refer back to Star Trek. That's the one thing, again, I loved about Star Trek is they mentioned the Vulcans as an example. The first time the Vulcans reveal ourselves, we'd already destroyed ourselves 3 times. We'd already rebuilt from that. And the only reason they revealed themselves eventually is because we finally developed a form of space travel that would no longer mean that we were alone, that somewhere along the line we were going to encounter them anyway. And now it was time for them to show up since they're the logical race before we end up in chaos and starting wars with them and other cultures and say, hey, welcome. Let's show you how to do this right.
Yeah, well, the main part of this treaty among other cultures is they all get along. They learned a long time ago that mutual destruction doesn't help anybody. And they're all so powerful, they could wipe worlds out at a time. So in the great big picture, everybody gets along. It's a difficult concept considering what goes on in D.C. and what we're hearing on the news shows. But once your culture advances, you have no choice but to get along, or it's Armageddon for everybody.
Yeah, and I think the human race will get there eventually. Right now, we don't understand that concept because we fight amongst each other, and it's a part of our culture, and it's a part of our nature. But eventually, we will get past that. The sad thing is, what's going to happen before we get past that?
A lot of pain.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about I know I threw up a link for everybody on my Facebook page and my Twitter page so that everybody can find your books. But let's talk a little bit about where they can find your books, where they can find yourself. Let's talk about where they can find your Facebook group so that they can keep in touch for the new book that's about to come out. So that way everybody knows, hey, look, I want to read Barry Strom's works. And by the way, I do encourage you to do it. He's got some fascinating books. Whether you believe what he's saying or not, they're still very interesting because they get into a lot of culture, a lot of history, and a lot of things that will make you really kind of sit back and think and do some research yourself.
It takes an open mind. There's no doubt about that. I mean, if 10 years ago I would have had my books written by somebody else, I would say, man, what a fruitcake is coming up with these ideas. But unfortunately, we've come up with these ideas, or I should say fortunately, we try to present the concepts as simply as possible, but it's a long path from non-believing to believing some of the stuff that appears in these books. But we are told about it, and believe me, in many, many instances, this stuff is coming true.
So we know we can find you on Amazon. Obviously, if you guys type in Barry Strom's books on Amazon, you'll actually find all of his existing books. You can order them on there. I do know that some of your books are published through Barnes & Noble, and you can actually find them on Barnes & Noble's site as well. But let's talk about your Facebook group a little bit and the name of the Facebook group so that they can follow along with you there and they can see some of the updates.
Okay, yeah, we have a Facebook group. It's called Words of God, Then and Now. It's an open group. You can apply. Well, it's not open. You can come in and apply for membership on it. But when we do these very special channeling sessions, I often post the transcripts in the group. And we actually do Facebook Live that you can watch us do live channeling. We're going to be channeling on Monday night on Facebook Live in the group. You have to be a member to watch it as it takes place. But it's going to be a very exciting event on Monday night. Best way to find this is on my website. It's called spiritspredict.com, spiritspredict.com. And I have another, I have a new website called wordsofgodthenandnow.com, which has the same name as the Facebook group. And the new website has got all the transcripts from our recent channeling sessions, information on the books, information on how you can get a hold of us. And we're pretty easy to find. We're a little harder to believe, but we're pretty easy to find.
Well, you heard it here, everybody. You'll know where to find Barry Strom and his books. I encourage you to actually listen to that. Next week's show, I have a very special guest. I will put it up on my Facebook page either Monday or Tuesday, and we will have the full ad on Thursday as usual. We are broadcasting on BBS live on Facebook now, so make sure that you tune in on Facebook if you haven't had a chance. And we'll be actually doubling over on Facebook Live every now and then with some live broadcasts on my page as well from time to time, just so that you can see a face with a face and so forth until we work out more details with BBS on how things work, and then we'll be running directly with BBS on all of that. BBS Radio is one of the largest radio stations in the United States. They're doing podcasts, Facebook Live, and a lot of interesting things throughout the year. So if you do want to do a show, I encourage you to get a hold of Donald. You've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality with Barry Strom, and I'm your host, Christopher Houston. I'm going to let you off of here again the way I do every single episode, and that is, remember, everyone, as you're noticing with Barry, who's a wonderful author, in the paranormal, truth should always be that reality, and truth is always the way you look at it, so always keep an open mind and listen to everybody. You can sort through that as you see fit, but understand that we're a wonderful community with a lot of different perspectives, and each perspective plays a little bit on how you grow if you allow it to happen. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll speak to you soon.